afternoon and welcome to the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest health news and research from all around the globe. Hope you guys are having a wonderful Friday today. Dad is going to be taking off today. He's getting ready for the Hagman Show tonight. He has got a plethora of new information. He's going to be going over a lot of stuff he's been working on all week. Really interesting. I was discussing it this afternoon with him. So you guys should be definitely pretty thrilled for that show tonight. I would definitely listen to it. That's one you don't want to miss. So I have my wonderful mother on here, Sharon Brower. She'll be joining me today, co-hosting the show. So we got a lot of good articles we'll still go over with you guys, a lot of new stuff that's kind of moving and going on. So I just wanted to let you guys know that. Also, too, again, remind you guys, the Sublingual B12 is still on sale as product of the week. That's been a very popular product this week since it's gone on sale. So just wanted to start off with that. First thing I wanted to say is up in Charlotte right now, you know, I want to make sure everybody understands that this is not something you need to be participating in as far as these violent riots. I'm sure our listeners already would not engage in this type of behavior, but Charlotte police now are saying that around 70% of the arrested protesters so far have out-of-state IDs, which is going to show you that this is, again, another Soros or some other globalist-funded violent mayhem group that is coming down here, confirming what may have suspected when viewing the sudden and intense collapse into anarchy that occurred in Charlotte this week. Todd Waltman, spokesperson for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Fraternal Order of Police, told CNN today, he said, "This is not Charlotte that's out here. These are outside entities that are coming in and causing these problems. They are not protesters. They are criminals. We got the instigators that are coming in from the outside. They were coming in on buses from out of state. If you go back and look at some of the arrests that were made last night, I can say around 70% of those had out-of-state IDs. They're not coming from Charlotte." And if you guys remember back about a year, year and a half ago, when Ferguson went up and fired smoke again, you remember we heard the exact same thing. There was just literally hundreds and hundreds of people that were getting picked up. They were not even from that area, not even from that state. They were coming in buses, and then we find out later that Soros had donated tens of millions of dollars to multiple different social justice organizations to try and fund all that violence and anarchy. So again, guys, this is not something, these are not peaceful protests. They're not standing on the sidewalk picketing. They're intentionally going out there to inflict bodily harm on anybody that comes in their way, including law enforcement. This is not the way to get everybody's attention. This is not the way to get anything done. When you start going in and you start trying to go with a group that essentially is supposedly for peace, which they're not mainly, you start really, really making the rest of the country quite irritated. So we know this is not their overall goal. It's to come in there and incite violence and mayhem and riots, and that's, again, what they're doing to create instability in the country and everything that's going on. I know, Mom, you were telling me the other day they had shut down I-85. You guys are still planning on going up to Georgia sometime in the next couple weeks. So I told you, you know, you got to watch out for a lot of this stuff. But I mean, you know, from a parental standpoint, Mom, you know, if you start having a lot of these kids that want to go out there and they're teenagers, I mean, what's the best way to try and instill in them in the mindset that this is not okay behavior? Because a lot of these kids now have this really entitled mindset that we've seen. You know, it doesn't matter what happens, they think they're entitled to everything. So a lot of this, you know, we have to do the best we can as parents to raise our kids in a better light. What do you think about that, Mom, as far as what are some key aspects we could do?
This isn't Mom, but I'll answer the question.
Glad she came on with me.
Well, she did. She'll be right with you in a second. I had to cut in because I was supposed to get a phone call from Todd, and line must have been tied up or something. Guys, we'll be on with Hagman tonight, and we'll be basically on for three full hours talking about the fallen angel agenda. So it's going to be an interesting show tonight. You guys need to stay tuned for it. As far as answering the question for these kids, these aren't kids out there, Austin, so there's not a whole lot you can do to tell these kids not to riot. I think their mamas and daddies have already told them not to. These are paid protesters. These are people that are coming in, and they're a full-blown riot instigators. And that's exactly what they want to do and who they are. So these guys are just bad, bad, bad news. And I don't think any type of parental input is going to make any difference for these guys. They're almost like paid mercenaries. This is what they're there for. This is what they're being paid to do. And this is their agenda. But I'm going to give you back to your mom real quick. You guys, I love you guys. I'll talk to you guys tonight.
All righty.
I'm back with you, Austin.
Okay, glad you're back with me.
he just wanted to greet the audience and let them know, you know, to come on. Let me just say one thing. You and your father, and I'll vouch for this, research, I mean, 24/7 it seems like. You guys are always researching. You're always making sure that you know the latest, and you need to make sure that you're accurate. And it's amazing how much time and research goes into these shows so you can get this information out to the people. And I just want to commend both of you because I see how hard you work at it. And it's because it's your passion and because you really want to help people. You want to educate them, you want to inform them, and then you want to entertain them while you're doing it. Not to make all this stuff boring, not to put people in fear, but to have people wake up, use wisdom, enjoy life, but always be prepared for whatever's out there. And I know I'm, you know, a proud mom and a proud wife, but I mean, I see all the work that y'all go in and put into this. And I mean, you guys make this a big priority. It's your life, and I'm just proud to be a part of it.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that, Mom. Thank you.
You're
also
welcome.
Too, up in Georgia, this is interesting. This was some of the most dramatic home security footage I've seen in a long time. You guys can look at it online. It was up in Gwinnett County, Georgia. The footage shows three armed attackers kicking in the front door of this home, going through basically looking for stuff, trying to steal stuff, and moments later, an armed female comes out of the back bedroom and basically starts unloading on them. Surveillance video from the inside of the home shows the Gwinnett County woman rush from her bedroom and unload on the three men who kicked in the front door. The woman is a local restaurant manager. She heard the three intruders break into her home around 4 a.m. on Friday. Video shows the men all have guns clearly in their hands as they exchange gunfire, which, by the way, they only got about one or two shots off wildly. She completely unloaded on them. You see drywall debris flying all over the place. The video shows one man in the corner straight run through the glass sliding door. He's so scared. He just runs through the door, glass door. The other man basically falls out in the driveway and bleeds out to death in the front driveway. The other man got away. So they're still looking for two of the individuals. One of them was deceased already when the police arrived from gunshot wounds. But this is why I'm so adamant in telling you guys that regardless of what you think, regardless of how you feel about it, firearms can and probably will save your life at a certain point in time if you know how to use them properly. This lady was fairly proficient with a firearm. I didn't quite agree with some of the video I saw in the surveillance as far as how far and how fast she rushed them. She was very, very close, arm's length at one point from one of the guy running to the side. I definitely think in a situation like that, you need to try and keep your distance. However, I must say, when you do have a handgun and three people are attacking you in your house with firearms and you start shooting at them at 4 a.m. when you've been woken up in the dead of the night and the concussion blast is pretty much going to completely shut your eardrums off, you're not really thinking about complete and total tactical, you know, perfection, I guess you could say, at that point. She did the best she could, and I was extremely impressed with her. She wasn't, you know, any type of, you know, large, aggressive lady. She's actually quite petite. She handled herself quite well with the firearm. But again, you know, from any type of perspective on the outside, I would have liked to have seen her keep her distance a little bit further so that one of the men couldn't have tried to disarm her. But nonetheless, she did an amazing job at basically getting one of the intruders, obviously, and then getting the rest of them outside. So I thought that was a pretty interesting video. Do you guys see that? I know, Mom, you're the same way. You got a concealed carry permit, and I know we always have stuff in the house all the time, and always in a safe manner so that children can't get to it. But this right here, this video just shows you why you need to have some type of equal armament to home invaders. These were three full-size males. I mean, full-size males. One of them wearing a hoodie, all with firearms in their hands, ready to go. Three of them. So if you'd have come out of the bedroom with a baseball bat or a golf club or even a knife, there would have been very, very little she could have done whatsoever to defend herself against these three guys. Whether or not they would have killed her or harmed her, I don't know. They may have had the firearms just for show. But regardless, when you kick in somebody's door at 4 a.m. and you're armed, you better expect to get shot, at least around here and especially in Georgia. So it was a very interesting video to watch. I don't know if you got a chance to see that yet today. Did you, Mom? I showed it to Dad.
No, I haven't. But, you know, it's interesting, Austin. You've always told me you don't take a baseball bat or a knife to a gunfight.
Yep.
And you've been so well, and so has your father been so well at teaching us gun safety and scenarios like that. And, you know, she may not have done everything right, but she's alive and she's not wounded. And that's the main thing in her own home. Now, I know if I'm ever by myself, if you and Dad are gone or something, you know, I go through scenarios in my head because, you know, you have to think about all this and I've got my guns and all that. But you just never know what you're going to do when it really happens. And you've taught me more than anything else, especially when it's not a life or death situation and you're handling handguns. I've learned from you, you never muzzle sweep people.
Yep.
And you learn how to carry it. You learn how to shoot it. You learn how to pull it out. And it's just women have got to become more gun aware. They've got to take lessons. They've got to take classes. I've even told Austin I thought he needed to give classes because he's so good with those type of things as far as the scenarios and everything. But you've got to be prepared. Like, look at all these riots going on. I mean, Austin, who would have ever thought that you could be a professional rioter and make money?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the new profession, I guess, that they've come out with. But, you know, there's so much going on, and more people are hungry, more and more people are out of work, more and more people are desperate. And when people are desperate, they do desperate things. So you've always got to be ready for every scenario. Don't walk in fear. Don't live by fear. We walk by faith, not by sight. But always be ready and use wisdom. And I'm just blessed that I'm surrounded by these really, really alpha male, macho, gun carrying, Bible thumping, God loving men of God. And it's a blessing because they've taught me so much, and I feel very safe. But even when they're not here, I feel safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, guys, it's your responsibility as a husband, as a brother, as a father, treat and train females that are in your life on how to defend themselves when you're not around. Because I understand when you're with them, if you know how to defend yourself in hand-to-hand combat, you know, shoot fighting and jujitsu and stuff like that, that's excellent. If you carry a firearm, that's also excellent. Or both are even better. But, you know, you have to make sure that, you know, you're not around all the time. You're at work. You may be going somewhere with a friend. You may be doing something for business, you know, and you have to make sure that when you leave, you know, and you're confident enough with your spouse or your daughter or your sister or anybody that they are proficient to handle a firearm. A, that they aren't going to hurt themselves or somebody else in the house in the process, and B, they're going to be able to defend themselves and anybody else in the process. Because a big thing that a lot of people do, and I'm not picking on you guys if you've done this, but just understand where I'm coming from. I've seen this a lot of times, especially with concealed carry permit holders when guys help their wives get this. The first thing every guy wants to do is get their wife some nice, fancy, large, high-capacity, semi-automatic handgun, usually a Glock or a Ruger or a Taurus or something. And almost every time it's some 12, 13, 15-round capacity, medium-sized, full-size handgun. A, it's a semi-automatic. So the females, and probably nine out of 10 times, almost every single time I've seen my friends do this with their wives, A, don't carry around in the chamber. It's a semi-automatic handgun. They're scared to keep one in the pipe. So they always have it empty with a full magazine. Mm. So the first issue that arises with that, if you have to draw your firearm in the middle of the night, out of the nightstand, out of the safe, out of your purse, you automatically have to add on about a second and a half to 3 seconds to rack the slide, get the firearm hot, and then acquire your target. Those seconds right there can be deadly. Deadly. Secondly, a lot of women don't know how to handle firearms, and they jam if they get a stovepipe, if they malfunction. This is very common in shooting a semi-automatic handgun through a purse. Most females keep their pistols in their purse. I don't know a whole lot of them that carry side holsters or concealed, you know, in the waistband. And I understand that the purse is more convenient. The problem is with semi-automatics, they're very prone to malfunction if the slide catches on something, a zipper on the inside, a back of the purse, something like that. So if the gun malfunctions off the first shot, the gun is now jammed and completely useless because you're not going to have a female there that's going to know how to dump the mag, rack the slide, clean it out, re-rack it, get it loaded up, and get back on target. The fact that you could even do that in the middle of a hand-to-hand conflict would be next to impossible anyway. So those are the concepts you have to get. If you're getting your wife a defense handgun, I always recommend you go with a good, reliable revolver. And all people always go, well, it only holds 5 shots or 6 shots or some of the Smith & Wesson's hold 7 shots. And my first question is, how many times do you plan on her having to shoot somebody? Even in the video, when this lady unloaded, she had a nice, medium-sized semi-automatic, and she emptied out about 8 to 10 rounds. That was about the most that I saw. And the last 2 to 3 rounds were completely unnecessary, in my opinion. They weren't necessary to shoot, but she did anyways, and that's okay. Especially for concealed carry, guys, you need to have a lightweight, reliable, concealable revolver. 357, 38 special, anything in that caliber right there is perfect. A, it's lighter. B, it's easy to handle inside the purse. C, it's always hot. All you have to do is pull the trigger. You don't have to rack the slide. You don't even have to pull back the hammer if you don't want to. All you have to do is squeeze the trigger through the purse. It won't malfunction. It won't jam. It won't clog up into any type of material as far as the slide catching. You can squeeze the trigger right through the purse repeatedly. You don't even have to draw it or expose it. That's why I'm so adamant about that, guys. When you're getting your wife a concealed carry handgun, now if she trains in the house for a home invasion scenario, which I suggest you do, and she has access to a semi-automatic handgun that stays hot all the time with a round in the chamber, that's fine. I completely am okay with that. Lana has one of those as well. Usually a Glock 19 is what she prefers that stays hot on a regular basis. Then at that point, it's completely different because you've trained for that scenario. They know exactly what to do. And in a home defense scenario, you generally have a few seconds to acquire your weapon before they're going to get you, since you're going to hear them breaking into the house and usually into the rooms in the next room before they even get to your bedroom. Whereas a purse gun or a concealed carry gun, you're most likely going to be attacked in a parking lot. You're probably going to be surprised. It's going to be something you don't even know is coming until they're literally on top of you. So you need to have the ability to reach in your purse, grab the handle, squeeze the trigger, and it goes bang. And that's all they have to be able to do, as simple as possible. And that's just my common knowledge. That's what I've experienced. That's what we've trained through concealed carry with purse shootings, everything like that. I even have one of my good friends who's a sheriff. When he was married to his wife, the first thing he always told me, he said, make sure if you get your wife a handgun for her purse, it's a revolver. And every single law enforcement officer I know, if their wives carry handguns, it's always a revolver when it's in their purse. So I just kind of wanted to add that on there. So I went a little rant there. I apologize for that, but I wanted to kind of instill that in everybody, because I've seen this happen a lot lately where husbands want to buy their wives these big, fancy, medium-sized semi-automatics that are never loaded. Never loaded. Not once have I ever asked to see their firearm, and it's loaded when they pull it out of their purse. It has a full magazine with an empty chamber, which is completely and totally useless. When we used to do real, real heavy firearm drills with 3-gun matches, we actually used to run a time clock to see how fast we could draw, you know, hands up, hold in a holster, draw the firearm, and get 1 shot on point chest from the waist. And we generally, with that, we stayed around 1.7 to 2.2 seconds on the draw, depending on where our hands were and where the target was as far as acquisition. When we changed it and we made the weapon empty with a hot mag without a round in the chamber, meaning we had to have hands up, go for our weapon, draw the weapon, rack the slide, then engage the target, it usually could not be done less than 3 seconds. And that was very fast to have that done. So that right there shows you anywhere from a second to a second and a half longer. And that was us pretty proficient, trying as hard and as fast as we could without having to grapple or fight somebody off to be able to draw, rack the slide, and engage the target. So that's our firearm lesson 101 for Friday today from Austin Brower, since that's what we're talking about right now.
Austin, the thing is, though, is, you know, like you said, you know, having to chamber it. I know my gun, I have a mini Glock, and it's very hard to chamber, so I keep a bullet in the chamber, but I have a safety, and I always keep the safety on, and then I've got to push the whatever that is in before I pull the trigger. So there's like a double safety on it. So I feel comfortable keeping it chambered all the time. Also knowing that I don't have to think about those extra seconds trying to chamber it because it's very hard. And another thing women need to also understand is they need to go out and shoot at the range as much as they can. Because if you're not used to it and you've got a fancy gun and you start listening to that loud gunshot, there's a natural instinct you do. You jump and you jerk. And when you jerk, you lose, I don't know how you know, Austin, but you lose your distance as far as where you're aiming, and it's going to, your gun's going to go up in the air. And you've got to get used to the noise. You've got to get used to the feel. You've got to get used to all of it. So I just highly recommend, if you are going to have one, keep it chambered, have a safety, and not have to think about, you know, chambering the gun. If you have a gun like that. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and the one you have, I think the mini one you have is the Kimber for
the
9mm one you have. Yeah, the Kimber's got the safety on it. The Glocks generally don't, but your Kimber does have that.
Yeah, that's right. Kimber, a mini Kimber's what I have. Yeah,
that one's perfect because you know as far as what's on that, you have your safety on it, and you do know how to shoot it. Again, like I said, I still prefer the revolver, but if you are going to carry a semi-automatic, make sure you know how to train with it. Make sure you've shot it numerous, numerous times, drawing it from the holster, drawing it from the purse, and just getting acclimated to it. Because what happens is the more you do that over and over again, and a lot of times when I've trained with people, they get so tired. They're like, this is so repetitive. Why am I doing this 20, 30, 40 times? The reason why you're doing it 20, 30, 40, 50 times is muscle memory. You're getting the body used to doing that movement over and over and over and over again. We used to learn this in jiu-jitsu and in taekwondo when we were younger. The muscle memory, you train your brain to do that without even thinking about it. So when the time comes, it's an automatic movement. You don't even hesitate. You immediately go for it, and your body instinctively does what it needs to do to handle the firearm, to acquire the target, to engage the target, and that's it. You literally don't even think about it. It's second nature. That's why I tell people that. They're always like, oh, well, you know, I go through and shoot a mag once or twice here, and that's it. No, you need to practice your reloads. You need to practice your draws. You need to practice shooting from a 180, meaning if you have the ability to safely do this, guys, you have private property, you have a target you can do this on, having somebody call, you know, basically contact, and you spin around to the rear, watching your muzzle as you draw, doing this in a safe manner, and acquiring a target behind you. This is much more difficult to get accurate, fast shots because your body is not used to looking forward, turning around and drawing and engaging something that's right behind you, because your entire equilibrium gets thrown off for the first quarter of a second while you're turning. So those are just a few different things you can practice on that aren't even crazy or, you know, tactical, so to speak, but just learning how to do things in different scenarios instead of the typical stand at the bench, load your gun, pick it up, shoot, put it down, reload it, pick it up, shoot, and do stuff that's actually normal. It's really quite normal in a shooting scenario. That's why I said go watch this Georgia home invasion shooting. You can see some of the aspects that she did wrong, but in general, she did exactly what she was supposed to do when it comes down to it. She defended herself with a firearm from three home invaders with firearms, and she stood there to tell the tale the next day and is still alive and was not shot. As far as I'm concerned, that's about as good as it can get when you're defending yourself in a home invasion scenario with a 3-to-1 odd like that. Now, this is something that's interesting. This is a whole nother level of vaccines now, and we're seeing more and more, guys, and this is why I keep looking out for articles more and more to wake you guys up and show you what's really going on with these vaccines. This is a whole nother game changer, again, that just happened. A study that was just presented at the International Meeting for Autism Research in London, England, which was done in the University of Pittsburgh, conducted on baby McCoy monkeys, revealed that the typical U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention vaccine schedule indeed triggered autism symptoms in the vaccinated monkeys, while none of the unvaccinated monkeys developed the disorder. Researchers from the University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania evaluated the typical CDC vaccine schedule on the infant monkeys, which were given the standard vaccine regimen as it was recommended by the government for human infants during the 1990s. Guys, this is almost 20 years ago vaccine schedule. This is about about 50 to 60% of what it is now. They've almost doubled since the 90s on what they recommend now for children. I think they've gone and added another 4 or 5 vaccines on top of the 4 or 5 that were already there. The McCoy monkeys share about 93.5% of the DNA found in the human genome, which makes them a very appropriate comparison for the evaluation. The vaccinated monkeys also experienced noticeable alterations in brain development compared to their unvaccinated counterparts, demonstrating clear signs of impairment that is characteristic of autistic children. They go on to say in here, now children could receive as many as 24 shots by 2 years of age and 5 shots in a single visit. The result is that the vaccine schedule has become even more complicated in the 90s, like I just said, than it once was, and children are receiving far more shots than before. As far as the link between vaccine and autism, SafeMind is working towards passing legislation to completely ban all mercury in vaccines, including flu shots and the ones given in pregnant women. Now, what's also interesting about this, too, is that they didn't even discuss the aluminum adjuvants, the formaldehyde adjuvants, everything else. They're just mentioning the mercury that's in some of these. And they said there's no reason why this noxious chemical substance should ever be in any type of vaccine, period, much less be injected into the developing body of a young child. The research underscores the critical need for more investigation into immunizations, mercury, and the alterations seen in autistic children, said Lynn Redwood. SafeMind calls for a large-scale, unbiased study that looks at autism, medical conditions, and the effects of vaccines given as a regimen. So, guys, this is just another one after hundreds and hundreds that I've looked through before, after I've probably gone through 50 or 60 of these on the show in the past year. This is clear-cut evidence now. These monkeys blatantly hold 93.5% of our DNA genome, very, very similar to human genome, and they all were having issues with autism that were vaccinated, and none of them that were basically not vaccinated had any type of autistic issues. It doesn't have to get any clearer than this, guys. What do you have to do? Go use your child as a test guinea pig to see if I'm right? Oh, imagine that. They end up having autism. It doesn't get any clearer. That's why I keep telling people over and over and over again, but nobody wants to listen. It's one of the most irritating topics to talk to people about in person, because they give you this blank, idiotic stare like you're some crazy nutbag, because you say, no, maybe you need to think twice about letting your 2-year-old have 24 different immunization shots by the time they're 2 years of age. Maybe that's a concept that just seems odd to me, but when's the last time anybody thought it was a good idea to jab needles in yourself with a foreign substance over and over and over again besides heroin or methamphetamine addicts? I don't know anybody else that thinks that's a good idea at all, but for some reason these pediatricians think it's normal and they talk you into it and make you think that you have to do it right now or else basically your child's going to become sick and die. I can literally think of dozens, probably close to 20 children now that I know of or know that haven't been vaccinated, with parents that I've talked to in person, children that I've hung out with in person, that I've talked to, that have not had a single vaccine, including myself, except for a tetanus shot when I was 13, and not had any type of significant illness ever. Period. And then they say, well, that's just random chance. You need to make sure you get vaccinated anyways. Guys, it doesn't get any more clear than this. These monkeys were all developing, all coming down with autism-like symptoms after they were given the vaccines, when the monkeys that weren't given the vaccines had no symptoms at all for their entire lifespan of this study. I don't know how to be any more clear than that. Do you, Mom?
No, and you know, Austin, I remember you getting that tetanus shot because you had to go to camp, and we fought it, but no, we wanted you to go to camp, and you got deathly ill. You got a super high fever, and I didn't want to send you to camp, and I felt so bad for you because you'd never had one immunization, and your body took it in as such a poison, just like that one time at the wedding when you had the red dye in that punch, and we didn't see you drinking it, and you were just over there guzzling it. You were like 7 years old, you know, just, oh man, you had you something. And that stuff was so toxic to you that you had a cough for almost 4 months, and I saw a speck in your iris of your eye from toxicity. And so when you're that healthy, your body is just, it won't tolerate it and it'll fight it off. But these kids don't have a fighting chance when they have all these immunizations. And guys, you got to realize we'll get on our hands and knees and beg you if we had to. That's how adamant, that's how passionate, that's how much we believe and we know because we've seen the results. You don't get the phone calls at the office when these parents call and say, oh, I wish I'd read your book. I wish I'd heard your show. I wish. No, we want the calls that people say, I am so glad I did. I'm glad I heard you. I'm glad I listened. I'm glad I researched. I'm glad I looked it up before I took my doctor's advice. And that's what I always want to say is, I want to look back and say, boy, I'm glad I did, not I wish I would have, because wishes and would haves and could haves are a horrible way to have to live. And if we make mistakes and we learn something in the future, well, just go on, and that's what grace is for. But when it has to do with the health of your children and what these poor children are going through, it saddens us. It grieves us to no end, because we love so much what we do, and helping people is so important to us. And you hear Austin, I mean, he's at the age where he's got friends that are having all these kids now, and it just tears him up when they don't listen. But, you know, all you can do, like the Bible says, is tell them the truth and then shake the dust off your feet and just leave it up to God and pray for them and just say, listen, you don't have to believe me. Go do the research and, you know, do it yourself. Go research all this stuff yourself, and then you make the decision. If you have any questions I can help you with, I'll be happy to help you. But that's all we can do. We can't do it for you, just like you can't make someone get saved. You have to let the Holy Spirit convict them, and you can plant seed in them, and then someone else can water it, and then maybe they'll get saved, or they do get saved. But, you know, we're believing that we're planting all kinds of seed into our listeners, and then you guys are going out and you're spreading the word even further, getting more and more people to listen to the show, more and more people to go online and research this themselves. And just, you know, if they don't want to listen to you, have them go to Health Masters and just read the material online that we have at least. But do something. Especially if you know that you know that you know what you're doing is right, you've got to be out there doing something. Sorry,
yeah, you're absolutely right. No, that's the truth. That's why, I mean, when you start figuring this stuff out and you start finding the truth, guys, you have a responsibility. You have a duty to wake other people up. And they may get mad at you. They may get irritated at you. They may not like what you say. No, well, if they're really friends with you, you'll get past it and you'll move past it. If they want to sit there and hold a grudge and be bitter towards you and have malice towards you, then that's on them. They can sit there and they can hold that bitterness and they can internalize it, but at least you know that you did the best you could to try and give them the most accurate, truthful research, information, knowledge that you knew of to try and help them, help their family be as safe and as healthy as they possibly could. Like I just said, if they don't want to listen, if they don't want to do it, that's on them. You know, you don't have to sit there and be a nagging faucet every single time you see them, every time you talk to them, you basically chew them out. I don't suggest doing that. But if you tell them something once and they don't get it, and you tell it to them again and they don't get it, and you tell it to them a third time and they still don't get it, that's fine. Leave it be. It's not your responsibility anymore. That's why I tell people on the emails that I get all the time. When, same thing Dad says. When I get people that are asking me about their brother's son, you know, and he has this issue, what would you recommend for my brother's son? My first response is, please have your brother or your brother's son contact us directly, and I'll be happy to talk to them. Because quite frankly, if they don't even want to contact us, if they don't even want to have the respect to ask us personally or email us or call us, which we have a phone number, you can call us 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, we're always here, or you can email us on the website, we always answer emails to the best of my knowledge, then I can't sit there and waste my time and write out a whole protocol for somebody that's not even going to have the energy to call me up and ask me how to fix it.
That's right.
And it's just simple as that. I'm not being rude. Dad's not being rude. We're not being disrespectful. We're just being honest with you. We answer so many emails, and we try and take care of our customers that really want to learn, that really want to help themselves, their family, and everybody else, that I can't spend that time all day long answering questions about second, third, fourth, fifth-party people that don't want to call us. And that's honestly the truth. Now, back to some news over in the Middle East. Last weekend, if you guys heard about it, Assad had about close to 100 troops that ended up getting killed from an accidental airstrike, supposedly. Well, now he has gone on the record now and talked to the Associated Press, which you got to think of everything they say, but this flat out now, he's come out now and said that this U.S. airstrike was not an accident, guys. As we've told you guys multiple times this week and in the past, they are directly targeting Assad, his regime. They want to topple him down so they can get the Qatar pipeline in and so they can go in and control every single aspect of every single natural resource that Syria has, just like they've done in every other country now. Syrian President Assad says the U.S. airstrike, which killed 62 troops, was intentional and lasted for over an hour. Speaking to the press, the Syrian leader denied that the airstrikes carried out by the U.S. on September 17 were accidental. 62 soldiers were killed and over 100 were injured, according to the Syrian military. Assad said they were intentionally targeted. It was not an accident by one airplane. It was four airplanes which kept attacking the position of the Syrian troops for an hour. They were attacking the large area where the Syrian troops were stationed. Assad also questioned how ISIS was able to launch a full-blown attack so quickly after the airstrike. He goes on to say the ISIS troops attacked at the very same time as the American attack. How could they know that America was going to attack that position in order to gather their militants right away and attack us less than an hour after the strike started? It was definitely intentional. The Pentagon, however, came out and said the airstrike on Syrian troops was a complete accident, and it was aimed at Islamic State terrorist, ISIS. Assad claimed the U.S. is not interested at all in fighting terrorists in Syria. All they've done is support them with their airstrikes and with their weapon drops. He also said the conflict is likely to drag on because the U.S., there you go, the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar keep supporting those opposed to Assad's rule, including ISIS. So, guys, this is the whole smoke and mirrors that we've seen in the Middle East now with the U.S. fighting ISIS, fighting terrorism. And Obama gets on national television and says we have to be strong and fight ISIS. I completely agree with that, except we're not doing that. We haven't done that one single time. We're not aiming airstrikes at them. We're not cutting off supplies. We're intentionally funding the militants, the terrorists, in order to fight Assad. They've even come out and seen that now on videos with direct airdrops to these terrorists, videos of them opening up crates full of hand frag grenades, full of mortars, full of belted ammunition, resupply drops, and then the U.S., when the video surfaces, the U.S. goes, oh, that was an accidental supply drop. We dropped it in the wrong area. Really? You dropped it 100 miles off course, right on top of an ISIS terrorist stronghold? You just accidentally did that? Boy, we must have the most idiotic U.S. military in history. No, it wasn't accidental. They did it completely on purpose. They know exactly where to coordinate airstrikes and airdrops and resupply drops. They've been doing this for 60, 70, 80 years. This isn't something they just started doing last week. So, guys, be aware of what you're seeing on the media and understand that about 90 to 94% of everything you see and hear on the media is a lie. Just like we're seeing now, like Dad called it out so succinctly the other day, what's going on in Charlotte. The media is intentionally going at this and pulling all this information up and putting it all over the news with the riots. All they want to do is talk about the riots. They don't want to talk about the fact that Hillary Clinton looked like she was dead a week ago, and now all of a sudden she's going to be on live air debating Trump on Monday, which in my opinion, we'll see if that happens. It may. It very well may. I will definitely be interested to watch that if it does actually happen. But guys, my opinion, I suggest everybody be very aware, have very, very strong eyes and see what's going on. Situational awareness is key to everything. The media, your surroundings, your food, people you come in contact with, don't just blindly float around on your phone every day like an idiot, staring into your screen, walking down the sidewalk, having no idea what's going on. They call those people victims. That's what happens to them. They have no idea what's going on, and then things happen, and people wonder why they didn't see it coming. So be aware of what's going on right now because a lot of stuff is very sketchy and very strange that's happening, and most people aren't even aware of it, of what's really going on. So it's something everybody really needs to be aware of. I'm sure, you know, Mom knows that better than ever now, as far especially, you know, having a grandson and everything else. especially myself now having a child, you can't just think about myself now, my security or Lana's security. Now you have to think about another one again, and it's been a while since a infant's been in the house. Hunter's over there right now. Is he still sleeping, Mom?
Oh, he's still sleeping. He's such a trooper. I tell you what, you know, guys, this is another thing. Don't get me started on the cell phones and all that, what you're saying, but, you know, when you have a healthy baby that hasn't been immunized, that's on mother's milk, and that's all the baby has, they don't cry, they don't get fussy, and I know he teases, and at home, you know, you have your days, but I mean, he's such a joy. Well, I'm sure so many people would give anything to have that. And it's like you reap what you sow. Whatever you put into something, you're going to get out of it. And Lana and Austin research. They listen to me and Ted. They're so coachable. And, you know, having a baby for the very first time is very, very challenging and hard on a marriage because it's a new life. It's just your hormones, everything changes. But they've done so well, and I can't even imagine how hard it would have been for them if Hunter was having colic all the time and just being sick all the time and having doctor bills and all that. I mean, they're just so blessed, and they'll tell you, they're the first one to tell you, we are so blessed, but it's because of what they've, the seeds they've sown and what they've put into this child, not just when he was born, but prenatal and in Atlanta and everything else, it really pays off. But back to what you're talking about, you know, not being awake and kind of not what's going, knowing what's going on and being a victim. I don't know if it's me or not, Austin, but I am really getting pretty ticked off about all this social media and everything. And I admit, I love Facebook. I go on Facebook every day to see Hunter's pictures because that's the only way my daughter-in-law can stay in touch with her parents who are missionaries in Ecuador is through Facebook. And my mom, she's 82 years old. She stays in touch with her classmates when they're in their 80s and all that. So, and I understand that. And that's a good, healthy Facebook protocol. But as far as Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and all the, oh, I don't know, umpteen things. I think y'all talked about this yesterday, Austin. I'm just on a kind of a tirade over this because all these kids do is 24/7 take selfies of themselves, put it on Snapchat, take pictures of themselves, put it on this, put it on that,
yep,
constantly. And they're always texting. And I tell my kids, put your phones away. I don't want to see them. You know, you're in the house, we're a family, we're going to eat together, we're going to talk, we're going to do this, and my daughter will be getting her first phone here pretty soon, and I'm going to say, you're not having Snapchat. You have Snapchat, the phone goes away. Now, you may, yep, think, oh, well, you're not, you got to stay up with the times. No, I don't. The Illuminati, the government, this is their plan, this is what they're doing to these kids. They want them in an alpha brain mud phase, blank phase, and they want to walk it around not knowing what's going on, being so caught up in social media so they can't communicate, they can't talk, they can't carry on a conversation, they don't know how to socialize, and that's exactly what the media wants them to do. It's exactly what the government wants them to do. The Illuminati wants them to do. They want them to be so caught up in this stuff, in the pornography, in all the bad stuff that the internet has. And granted, this is what we do. We do internet radio. We have an internet business. I understand, and I think that's wonderful. But just with everything else, Satan can take it and turn it around. We've got to be on our guard. As parents, we've got to be awake. It can't be laissez-faire. It can't be, oh, it'll work out. Oh, I'm not going to bother them. Oh, I'm not going to check on this. You better check on this because it's going to take your child down to hell and back. And I know this is sounding rough, but I've had it with this. I'm tired of Satan. I'm tired of the Illuminati. I'm tired of all this coming after our children, coming after our marriages. And let me tell you something. If you're a husband or you're a wife out there and you're contacting all your classmates through Facebook or Snapchat or something like that, and it's the opposite sex, you better stop right now because all that's going to do is take you down another road. Just because you're not in high school or college and you're married and you think that it's okay, it's not okay. I'm very careful. If I had a college guy from or a high school guy contact me on Facebook or something, I don't think I would answer them because the Bible says no appearance of evil. I can't afford to. My marriage is really, really good, and I want to keep it that way. But you've got to be on your guard, just like Austin said. You've got to be awake. You've got to know what's going on. You've got to know their agenda. If you know their agenda, you know what they're going to do. And you don't have to be a part of it. You don't have to participate. And I chose not to participate. Our families chose not to participate. We use it. We use it in a good way. And we take advantage of the good parts of the internet. But the bad parts of the internet are past bad. They can get really, really bad, causing breakups, causing divorces, causing affairs, I hear it all the time. And it's horrible. I could tell you story after story, and you could probably, you know, y'all listening could tell me stories too, or maybe you have a story. But guys, just be awake and realize that Satan's out there like a roaring lion, seeing who can devour. It's obvious they don't want the family unit around anymore. It's obvious that they're trying to destroy a husband and wife being in charge of the family and having a family unit. You go back to the Word of God. That is our manual for everything. It's our manual for marriage. It's our manual for relationships. It's our manual for health. It's our manual for life. It's our manual for living. It's our manual for disciplining our kids. It tells you everything you need to know. You just need to open it up and shake the dust off of it, because it isn't going to open up by itself. You've got to get in that Word and get it inside of you, because there's going to come a time when all you have is the Word of God in you to fight. And we've got to fight. We've got to fight for our country. We have to fight for our kids. This is no joking matter anymore. And this isn't for the lazy people. Those that are going around saying, oh, it'll be, will be. It'll take care of itself. Oh, this, that. I hate to tell you, it's too late for that attitude. So wake up, people. And this is, I'm not talking to our audience. I want to get the people in our audience to have the passion and get as passionate as I am right now and get out there and start talking to people. It's not time to be quiet anymore. We got to wake up this sleeping lion and get him roaring. Like the song that the Newsboys sing. God's not dead. He's still alive. He's roaring like a lion. And get out there and just get passionate. Go, Austin.
I'm letting you go with it, man. I appreciate it. I love the energy. It's definitely what we need right now. That's what we've been trying to do on a whole nother story. Now this is interesting. Same thing we've been talking about now. DHS has been approving as many citizenship applications as possible in an effort to directly influence the presidential election. Internal documents show this is similar to the same thing I was telling you yesterday about the international voting that the UK is trying to do to get 8 million people that live abroad to vote, because they're trying to get as many people as they can on the Hillary bandwagon. The problem is, every time I talk to somebody, even people that don't like Trump still hate Hillary too much to vote for her. And so many people are not wanting to vote for her at all. A lot of people aren't even wanting to vote in this election. But Senate Republicans obtained an email now showing Texas immigration offices demanding volunteers to work overtime in an effort to grant as many citizenships as possible before the end of September, giving them time to register to vote for the election in November. This is unreal. The memo from a branch chief of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service Houston's office said the goal is to approve as many citizenship applications as possible due to the election year. Democrats and their pro-amnesty allies launched an effort earlier this year to help 1 million permanent residents become citizens so they could register to vote to defeat Donald Trump. The newly revealed memo cast suspicion as well on the claimed 800 illegal immigrants, when I talked about this beginning of the week, from countries tied to terrorism who were approved for citizenship despite being ordered out of the country, and by accident they were approved because the USCIS did not check their fingerprints. And this is so funny, because, like I said before, this wasn't accidental that they approved these guys to come in here. No. This is a direct hit on the U.S. population. They're doing everything they can to get as many people citizenship as they can, because they don't want Trump being in office. They have to get Hillary in, or they have to get into whoever is replacement if they end up, you know, basically assassinating her, or she's too sick to run, or something, because something is going to be a plan B. I can guarantee that right now. There's so much stuff going on. There's so much obfuscation going on with people coming out and all kinds of weird stuff happening behind the curtains. I promise you guys, we have not seen the end of what's happening before this election. No. They are trying to get something in play. Remember, these globalists don't just have one agenda. They have plan A, B, C, D, F, and so long. they always have a different play they can try and pull. It just may not be as perfect as the first one, and they put them behind. That's why, like Mom said, we have to be awake, we have to be aware of what's going on, and we have to be praying and staying in the Word and being awake and realizing that this is not a joke anymore. If we want this country to be left for our children, which, you know, it even strikes me even harder now because I have a kid. You know, before it's like, you know, this is us, this is Landa, this is Health Masters. But now when I have a child, it completely changes your outlook on everything. And everybody, all of our listeners that are parents, you guys already know this, because now it's not just us anymore and doing this now. Now it's like, what are we going to do for Hunter when he's 10, 15, 20 years old? What are we going to be able to give him with this country? What type of rights are going to be lost by that time? How far down the rabbit hole is it going to keep going if we don't try and make some type of stand now and bring us back to where we go? That's why, I mean, you know, I was talking to my buddy the other day. He's got a daughter who's about to turn 4, and, you know, he bought her one of the Smith & Wesson AR-22 AR-15s, which I already have two of them, actually, and I'll be training Hunter on that platform in a couple years. And, you know, we were over there, and she was shooting it on the range, and she was doing great. And he was teaching, you know, finger control as far as keeping your finger off the trigger, keeping the safety on at all times until you're ready to engage your target. And this girl was running this AR-22 like a champ. I mean, she was just running and gunning with it, and I was so impressed. And I said, you know what made you think about this? And he goes, we have to keep this generation awake to the firearms, the Second Amendment. We have to make them realize that guns aren't bad. Shooting people is bad if you're not trying to preserve your life or defend your life or somebody else. We got to let them know that guns kill people, but safe citizens that are trained properly don't do that. And so it's really important, guys, if you have kids, to get them involved in stuff. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, you don't need to go take them. I mean, a hunter safety course, that's cool. You can teach them that. But you need to teach them real-world life tactics as far as with firearms, real true safety, keeping the muzzle in a safe direction, keeping your finger off the trigger, keeping your safety on, especially on an AR platform. So I was really impressed to see that with this little girl. And if you do it correctly, they realize it's not a toy. They see what happens when you hit a watermelon with a 12-gauge shotgun. He's shown her that as well, and it terrified her. But yet, on the other hand, you still teach them how to safely handle and train with a firearm and know that it's not a toy. It's a tool that can be used for a very specific application. But we have to get this younger generation back up with their shoulders back and their head up, because I've seen too many of these kids, as Dad and I talked about on the show the other day, they act a bunch like a bunch of little slack-jawed pansies. You can't even tell who's the girlfriend or the boyfriend in the relationship anymore. They both look the same. And it's so mind-boggling to me, because if we let this generation continue to go downhill to this level of just weird perversion, whatever it's turning into, you know, I don't even know what Hunter is going to be exposed to when he's 10, 15 years old. It really troubles me. So, and, you know, Dad said a lot of it, you know, the hormones in the food and in utero and the estrogen and the BPA, and it is, a lot of it is, a huge part of it is, but a lot of it, too, in my opinion, from what I've seen now, is the very, very, very poor parenting that's being exhibited now in this generation, because nobody is wanting to raise kids anymore. Every time I go out to dinner somewhere and I see kids, I'm always eyeballing everybody. Every time I go, I told you guys that, I'm always looking around, not in a weird way, but I analyze stuff weird. I'm kind of strange. That's what I do. And I find it so odd that you go out and everywhere you go, kids are playing on iPads and iPhones at the dinner table like it's normal occurrence. That's what they do. Everywhere you go, it's immediately, oh, let me see a phone, let me see an iPad. I can't possibly keep myself occupied for 45 minutes at a dinner table and act like a respectable child. I have to sit there and be entertained by a gadget stuffed down my face 24/7, 365.
Hey,
it's
Austin?
Not parenting, guys.
Hey, Austin, I wanted to share something with you because that reminds me of something on Sunday at church.
Oh, yeah.
This little girl, I think she'd probably be 4 or 5 years old, had a little pink iPad, and her mom put it on games for her. And I'm watching her sit there the whole service, having it in her lap. Now, little girls are born with the amount of eggs they have for a lifetime. So whenever they get pregnant and they've got the eggs and all that to have their babies, they're in there. That little girl sitting there already at 4 years old for almost a 30-minute, 45-minute service with this iPad on her lap, radiating her ovaries, and just, you know, playing along with it. And like you say, the parents have to carry these iPads around and teach to keep their kids busy and quiet. Do you know how many times we've gone places and my kids have pulled a book out and started reading and people comment and say, oh, wow. I said, what's wrong? I said, your child's reading. I said, yeah, is that a new concept?
Yeah.
I mean, Austin, it's crazy.
No, you're absolutely right, because we've taken away now the idea of kids being self-contained and learning how to basically enjoy things on their own. You know, I remember back in the day, I loved G.I. Joes. Had them all over my room. Would save up money, buy G.I. Joes, buy the little gun packs they had with all the little different, you know, M16s and M60s and stuff. And I thought it was the coolest thing when I was a little kid. That's, I used to love that. I was either doing that, or I was running around outside riding the dirt bike, or I was riding the bicycles, or we were running through the orange grove. And I remember when we got a Nintendo 64, that was like the game changer right there. That was the first really serious game platform we ever played. And I remember we would play it occasionally inside, specifically when it rained. I remember that a lot, when it would rain in Florida, because it does that a lot here. And then, but other than that, it would pretty much be in the lake or riding dirt bikes or outside or playing with G.I. Joes. And now it's like everything has to be electronic. Kids don't want to read anymore. They don't want to play with G.I. Joes. They don't want to go swim in the lake.
You know that Nintendo 64, I kept it because I keep all y'all's toys up in the attic. That thing, because Austin has younger brothers and sisters, they still bring their friends over and say, you want to play Nintendo? It's retro. Oh, I love retro. They go in there for hours, and they're not getting radiated because it's the old-fashioned thing
yep.
that hooks up to your TV. And they love it. They love Mario and 007 and all that.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because, yeah, I've seen them play that too, and I remember that graphics. Now you look at the graphics, they're horrible. They're so blocky. But it's still, though, you know, and in my opinion with that stuff, it's so much better, especially with young children, because your level of reality and video game are still completely separated. When you see it, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm obviously playing a video game. The issue now with these video games is the kids are getting so wrapped up in them mentally because they literally look real life with these first-person shooter games. And these kids are not developing mentally like they're supposed to because they're so obsessed. I mean, some of these kids, they literally spend 8, 9, 10, 12 hours a day on their video games, and that's it. But
we're saving Nintendo for Hunter.
Yeah. But guys, we appreciate everything. Hope you know the show was good for you today. It was a little off topic, all over the place, but Dad is going to have some really interesting info for you guys tonight. So stay tuned for the Hagmann Show, 7 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. Going to be a really wild show. If you guys need anything, give us a call, email us, healthmasters.com. You guys have a blessed day. Have a wonderful night. Enjoy the show and have a safe weekend.